This is the Podmatic Podcast for February 24th, 2016. This is not a common year. I repeat!
This is not a common year.
A common year?
Podmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian. Joining me today are
Bill, and I'm not wearing pants.
Amanda, and I'm scared again. It's 2 weeks in a row I'm scared.
Is that a Howard the Duck reference?
Oh.
Jeremy? Didn't we skip that?
Mike Rock the Leaper.
Mike Rock the Leaper.
So if you're wearing a shirt and no pants, that's called Donald Ducking.
Oh,
much to the chagrin of Howard the Duck. Okay, right, okay.
Oh, man. Time to get down.
I love pants.
This year is a leap year. What's that mean, guys?
It means you jump up and down a lot.
That's not what it means. Come on, what's it mean?
It means that Quantum Leap is coming back to television.
It means that our calendar's messed up.
Oh, yeah.
It gets
off, and we have to put in an extra day once every 4 years.
Tune in to 2019 whenever Leap Minute episode.
Ooh. Is everyone taking crazy pills? That is crazy. Why would any sane society ever do that?
Because the Earth revolves around the sun 365 1/4 days every year, and it's built in by our ancient forebears, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Gregorian calendar,
yes.
Like the 1500s.
There used to be no October.
1582, if you want exact year. Well, I did research.
Very nice.
Which actually is the modern era, not really our ancient forebears.
Well, yeah, that's true.
That's
okay.
Why I...
Corrections!
Yeah, corrections.
But people that are born on...
I think it'd be the Julian calendar.
People that are born on, like, leap year day, they're unicorns, right?
They are unicorns.
All right. I'm glad we cleared that up factually.
They're unicorns.
So on this show, we're talking about things that happen only every couple years.
Sort of.
Kind of.
So every 4 years, something extraordinary happens, and we get an extra 24 hours. Magical things can happen during this extra day at the end of February, and when you combine that with a trip abroad to Ireland, in and of itself a country known for magic, who knows what will happen. So there's an old Irish legend, it could be history, it's a story that's been passed down, that St. Bridget struck a deal with St. Patrick to allow women to propose to men on leap day. So normally, you know, the boy has to propose and do all the fancy stuff, but on leap day, the girls get a turn. So, in the movie that I'm going to talk about called Leap Year.
Get ready to lose your mind! Guess who I saw walking out of the store carrying that little red bag?
Oh my God.
So this is for you.
Okay, hold on. We got to work on your surprise face. Ask me. Will you marry me? Bigger eyes?
Oh, me?
The good news is you have time to practice between now and then.
They're earrings.
Yeah, a little something to keep your ears warm while I'm in Dublin.
It is leap year, you know. In Ireland, a woman can propose to a man on the 29th of February.
Dad, I'm not going to Dublin.
Oh my God! I'm not gonna die without getting engaged!
Ladies and gentlemen, we are diverting to Cardiff, Wales.
Wales? Hello. I need a taxi to Dublin.
I'm your man, Mrs.
I'll drive you to Dublin.
Thank you. I'm going to propose to my boyfriend on leap day.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I thought...
Woo!
Woo! That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
This January...
I guess. Let's move.
Comes as a real shock to find out that you speak fluent cow.
The girl who's always in control... will find out what happens...
You fried my BlackBerry.
You fried the whole village.
When you lose it.
No. Wait.
Stop it.
The car.
My ride.
I've got a room. You two are married, aren't you?
It's Mr. and Mrs.
O'Callaghan.
Lovely.
I just can't wait to see you. You can't imagine what I've been through.
You can see right through the curtain.
Can you?
No peeking.
You're young, married, in love.
Show us a kiss.
Oh.
Damn it, man. Kiss the girl. Now that's a kiss.
Just say yes. Just say there's nothing holding you back.
I'm really sorry.
For the touch of you
warm.
Yes?
Anna!
Will you marry me?
This was all I wanted.
Anna, played by Amy Adams, is working as an apartment stager in New York City and waiting on her cardiologist boyfriend of 4 years, played by Adam Scott, to propose. When he takes a business trip to Ireland, Anna has an idea, because there is a family legend that her grandmother proposed to her grandfather on Leap Day under this old Irish custom, because her family is Irish. So you can take that, Sadie Hawkins. Unfortunately, her journey goes less than smoothly, and due to a major storm, she ends up in Dingle via Wales. Shout out to Brian. Which is on the opposite side of the country from Dublin.
I'm pro Dingle.
Dingle dong.
Where her boyfriend slash future fiancé is in Dublin, so she's trying to get there. After struggling to find a new way to reach her destination, Anna hires the local bartender to drive her to Dublin, and along the way, they get blocked by cows, lose their car, miss the train, hit a bride in the face with a shoe, accidentally, of course, and somehow still manage to fall desperately in love with each other. For me, luckily, I'm already married, but I don't think that I could have participated in this particular tradition. And I don't know if I'm that brave, but the movie was fun. It was a little predictable, but sometimes you want that. But if you need something fun to do on your extra day in 2016, feel free to watch Leap Year during Leap Year. Brian?
All right, I'm going to do something completely different.
You and I are never different. We're always exactly the same.
So what I want to talk about was actually the Big Ears Music Festival in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is happening this year. It's going to happen on March 31st through April 2nd, and it's basically a festival of avant-garde experimental and art music. It started in 2009, happened in 2010, and then they took a little break.
Oh, what's that, Faith?
They took a little break, and it was off for 2 years, and now it's going again. 2013, 2014, 2015, it's going to happen in 2016, and I got to tell you guys who organized this festival, if you got to take a break every couple years just to keep it going in the future, that's totally okay with me. I'm just going to name some of the artists that are on the lineup this year. You'll probably recognize them from previous podcasts. So Sun Ra's Orchestra, Wolf Eyes, Tony Conrad, Anthony Braxton, Iko Mori, Shabazz Palaces. Okay, so those are the people I'm really excited about. But here's some even more people that are going to be there this year. John Luther Adams, Mamifer, The Gloaming, Yola Tango, Andy Stott, Bonnie Prince Billy, Andrew Bird, Mark Rabeau, Guitar Wizard.
Oh, wow.
Laurie Anderson has been on, we're talking about on the podcast a lot. Kamasi Washington, who is the sax player on Kendrick Lamar's album To Pimp a Butterfly. And last but not least, Sun O. And those. And those are just like sort of the recognizable names that are playing. This is sort of flabbergasting that this festival is happening in Knoxville. I think, like a lot of people, it's just this bizarre coup that you could get such an amazing lineup outside of New York City to come and meet every year. And I'm tempted to go and just read the past lineups that have just been equally amazing, but I won't do that. I've already tortured you all with a list. A lot of people that come to this festival, they like it because it's actually in a semi-small town. So Knoxville is a college town, and there's a lot of culture there because it's a big university.
Go Big Orange.
There's also a lot of football and basketball. But, you know, there's always a lot of culture in college towns. But people like it because it's a smaller town. And unlike a festival like South by Southwest or a big festival like Coachella or Bonnaroo, it's like you can breathe. You don't have to be outside in the sunshine.
That's a good time of year to
do it. Exactly. Yeah. There's not someone who's high, like, flinging their sweat on you as they flail about. So
porta potties spread out like a Golden Corral buffet.
So they've talked about how the venues, because it's mostly art music, the venues are usually laid back and chill. Often there's seating, so it's like people that are like all there to like really have like a really intense, intentional music experience. And one of the things when I think about when people write about what's good about the Big Ears Festival, I think about what Bill said about when he goes to the theater. He's like, if you're in the right crowd or actually there to see the movie, then it can be an awesome experience. And this is, I think most of the people that come to Big Ears, this is what they're there for, and it has been an amazing experience. So definitely the headlining of this year is composer John Luther Adams, whose profile has exploded in recent years. He won a Pulitzer Prize and a bunch of Grammys. He's kind of like got out of the, I think I would say, the New Age ghetto, no offense, New Age artist, and sort of become this like nationally known composer who's very respected in the academy. He's probably as well-known as you can get and still be a contemporary classical composer, I think. But one of the things they'll be doing there is his piece Vespers and Veils, which does not get performed that much because here's what it is. It's a set of electronic pieces that are meant to be heard successively or concurrently, but they're installed together in a specific space, and then the user creates their own mix by, like, walking around the space. And they can, like, sit in a particular section in the space for as long as they want, and there's different harmonic colors, like, where they go in the space. And this the piece is actually, like, 6 hours long. So Veils and Vesper will be in a abandoned church in Knoxville.
Veils and Vesper is my most rigorously mathematic and most unabashedly sensuous piece. It's a sound installation, which I composed in 2006. And it's composed entirely of synthetic noise, generated entirely on a computer, with a set of numbers, prime numbers, 11 through 31. There are seven primes between 11 and 31. And those numbers, through a series of algorithms, generate all the sounds in the piece, both the tuning and the temporal dimension of this piece is are controlled by those numbers. And if that all sounds clinical, I guess in a way it is, but the result is just this ocean of sensuous sound. The piece is, among other things, my homage to Johannes Akkagem, the great Flemish composer, and Renaissance choral polyphony. So it's appropriate that it's installed here in a church.
So, like I said, Adams has really exploded in recent years. He won the Pulitzer Prize, and a lot of his work is obsessed with nature. He actually, his day job for a long time was he was like an environmental activist in Alaska. And his pieces, I wouldn't describe them as ambient, but he's really obsessed with like taking the sounds of nature and like turning them into music. And I think that's very apparent. He also, because he lived in Alaska for so long, there's a lot of ice and snow themes, and I love that. I mentioned that, you know, in passing before. He's really good at integrating electric keyboards into orchestral pieces, or at least like ensemble chamber pieces, without making it sound like typically New Age.
Just to clarify, you said John Luther Adams. This is different than John Adams, the composer.
Much to the chagrin of John Luther Adams, yes. This is a different composer.
Okay, just clarifying. Okay.
Yes. But the other really famous composer that's going to be headlining at Big Ears is Laurie Anderson, and she'll be presenting her film, The Life of a Dog, but also she'll be doing another installation drone piece that's similar but different, but it's called Lou Reed's Drones. And as some of you know, Lou Reed's album Metal Machine Music is the sort of seminal document in noise music and industrial, depending on who you ask. So she has created an installation. Lou Reed and Laurie Anderson were longtime spouses. She has created this installation around Lou Reed's drones. And what's interesting about, I think, Metal Machine Music is a lot of people just thought it was Lou Reed's jokes, one of his jokes, or like an FU to the record label or his audience or whatever. But throughout his career, he has defended it and said, no, this was serious music that I composed, and it sounds exactly the way that I want it to sound. And back when they used to do super 5.1 super CDs of audio, like, he really wanted Metal Machine Music released that way, but no one would put it out.
There was a remastered version of it that came out in, like, 2000 or 2001 or something, but it wasn't one of the 5.1 ones. But
well, I wonder if I... I just was mentioning this because we've talked about this before, and I've talked about noise music and stuff on the past on the show. If Anderson is actually fulfilling Lou Reed's wishes of finally having like a surround mix by doing like an installation with where the sound is coming from everywhere, Lou Reed's drones, the most amazing music festival in America, Big Ears, in just a few weeks, March 31st through April 2nd in Knoxville, Tennessee. All right, something totally different.
Oh, that sounds like a cue for me.
Mike!
Suddenly, as I look over my paper, I find that it's not crap. It's actually kind of clever. Oh, boy. So this is one of those themes where it sounds like a great idea, but then I'm struggling for weeks trying to think up anything to recommend. Even as I wrote this, I was not 100% sure about what the theme was. Elections? Rare things? Leaping things? Rare frog elections? Electing rare rabbits?
Wow.
So at first, I was like, I know, I'll select Hunger Games. Rowdy teens who are selected every few years for gladiatorial combat and or sexy love triangles. But then I was like, nah, that's too obvious. And I don't like enough to recommend. Then I was like, hey, how about trying to find a movie / book / whatever that has that ancient trope of once every so many years, the planets align, or this plant blooms, or this prophecy is fulfilled, or whatever. And our heroes have to stop it. But the problem with that ancient trope is that it's been done to death, and I can't think of anything I love enough to recommend. I can't recommend the Olympics because of sports. I can't recommend presidential elections because only I find them interesting.
Because I'm jerks.
And of course, I've already recommended Tim Powers, who only writes books every 5 years. And David Mitchell has joined the Under the Skin Club in the I've talked about this too much on the podcast penalty box. I could recommend Shirley Jackson's The Lottery, but I haven't read it. I could recommend The Good, the Bad, and the Infernal, a steampunk / spaghetti western about a door to heaven that opens every 500 years, but I recommended that in a Tickle My Fancy segment years ago. Frowny face. So, of course, today I'm going to recommend Cabin in the Woods, an indie horror film from 2012.
Everybody ready? The show on the road!
Doesn't even show up on the GPS. Is unworthy of global positioning.
That's the whole point. Get off the grid, right?
Hello? I'm thinking this thing doesn't take credit cards.
Sign says closed.
We're looking for, what's it called?
Tillerman Road.
Not to get you there. Getting back. That's your concern.
Oh, this is awesome.
Whoa. No way.
The lambs have passed through the gate. They are come to the killing floor.
Let's get this party started!
I seriously believe something weird is going on.
To stay together. This isn't right. We should split up.
Yeah, good idea.
Really?
We gotta get out of here.
Somebody sent those things here to get us.
You're missing the point. They want to see us punished.
I'm going to be like reviewers were back in the day, and this movie works best if you go into it totally cold. So I'm going to try to be less spoilery as I can, but, you know, if you're really interested in seeing it and are strangely incapable of buying DVDs, retrieving media, or going to your friendly downtown public library, then I suggest you skip ahead to Bill's segment, where he'll be recommending one-of-a-kind kangaroo caucuses. Oh. Even Jeremy does not like my
kangaroo.
My recurring bit about.
I can feel the smiling face on the drama thing just like crumbling.
Fine, whatever.
You killed comedy.
I'm like 9/11. Cabin in the Woods is about five college students.
Back.
We missed you, Mike. We missed you last week.
Aw, shucks,
wow.
Guys. Cabin in the Woods is about five college students who go to a cabin in the woods for a little R&R from their studies. Unbeknownst to them, their every move is being watched by members of a mysterious government facility. White-collar facility workers employ a mysterious old man who warns them to leave. Woo, don't go there. That cabin's haunted, I tells you. And they also generously supply the teens with a menagerie of homicidal movie monsters to summon, who start to kill them one by one. The survivors begin to suspect something maybe going on when they discover that the murderous zombie rednecks who have been stalking them emerge from a hatch in the woods. Ooh. It turns out that our heroes aren't just randos. They are specifically chosen for a yearly sacrifice. Ha! Tied in with the theme. It took forever. Cabin in the Woods brilliantly and hilariously obscures many of the tropes in horror, especially slasher movies. Every single horror movie that takes place in or near a house adjacent to woodlands has to have a line in its review that says some variation on, yeah, but after Cabin in the Woods, who cares? This trope has been done. Let's put this to bed. It's a great film. It's
directed by?
It's, I think, written and produced by Joss Whedon.
That's what I asked.
And,
Cabin in the Woods was written by Joss Whedon, but directed by Drew Goddard.
Came out the same week as Avengers, and guess which one I like more?
It came out the same week as Avengers?
Yeah. It was just about 3 weeks before, but I watched it the same week.
You watched it, okay.
Yeah.
That also should have come out earlier.
Yeah, it was shelved since 2009. Yeah. Apparently, according to Wikipedia, it was like one of the last films produced under like MGM's before their like bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And the new heads of the studio were like, the last heads of the studio did this, we're just going to dump it on Lionsgate. Yeah. Uh-huh. Lionsgate are like, woohoo!
Well, that's what Joss Whedon was talking about it. And he said, at the time, he said, don't look for this film to get released. They're having trouble getting James Bond made, so I don't think they're going to be worried about my little horror film. So,
listeners should look out. According to the catalog, we have the visual companion to Cabin in the Woods, which has a lot of pictures, apparently, of the. It both has the script and a bunch of the movie monsters in it.
Cool. So
I will be checking that out. Sounds like fun. What do you got, Bill?
1896 was a leap year. And something significant happened that year in American movie making. In that year, director William Wellman was born on February 29th, 1896, to be more exact. According to Internet Movie Database, William Wellman has directed 83 directorial credits, among them Wings, the first movie to win the Best Picture Oscar, the first gangster film, Public Enemies, also in that role that made James Cagney a star, The First Star is Born, the first screwball comedy, Nothing Sacred. He also did Western, social drama, war movies. I could go on and on, but I would like you to watch a very entertaining documentary called Wild Bill Hollywood Maverick. It discusses giving Robert Mitchum the role that was the breakthrough for him, inventing the sound boom, and the first disaster flick, which was The High and the Mighty, which I'm also going to recommend. We have it in our collection. It stars John Wayne, Robert Stack, Jan Sterling, and Claire Trevor, and one of the great music scores by Dmitri Tomanikin. And I did say that correctly.
One by one, they boarded the plane, the most bizarre group of people ever thrown together by fate on the most exciting adventure that ever spanned an ocean. There was Dan, who had used up his 9 lives and was starting on number 10. May, who could talk to a man without saying a word. Lydia, who was as low as high society can get. Sullivan, whose nerves of steel were beginning to rust. Sally, who lived in a world of whistles. Ed, who had taught himself to face disaster with a smile. Pardy, a heart full of courage wrapped up in a bundle of nerves. Childs, a wealthy collector of other men's wives. Flaherty, who thought he could hide his fears in a bottle. Agnew, a coward, until he held a gun in his hand. Spaulding, a right girl who had to be nice to some wrong people. Yes, the brash and the brave, big-timers and two-timers, the chaste and the cheats, morning glories and nighttime women, suddenly transformed by a single stroke of fate into people with all pretense gone and every violent emotion turned loose.
You're quite a conqueror with the ladies, aren't you? That should interest you, madam.
I've had enough of them.
What's the matter, you guys?
Hey, what's this all about?
Crazy? Break it up!
Crazy, he's got a gun.
What? The bottle on.
Yeah, homie, pull the bottle quick. Welby, check your final position. I'm gonna take her down.
Wait a few more minutes, Captain.
Do as I say.
But it looks like.
Do as I say.
Give him a few more minutes.
I've already waited too long. Here we go.
No, we don't. Get a hold of yourself, you yellow.
In brief, a commercial airliner develops engine problems in a trans-Pacific flight. The pilot loses his nerve, and it's up to the co-pilot to take over. You've got your suspense, you've got your soap opera, and superb storytelling. So check out the documentary Wild Bill Hollywood Maverick. And even if you're not a movie geek like me, you would still enjoy this because he was a World War I ace. Fascinating life. He really had a full and interesting life. And the film that he, one of his many films that he directed, The High and the Mighty. Jeremy?
He's Unicorns, Born on Leap Day. It's so, a proven fact.
So, dumb question. What was Robert Mitchum's breakout role?
Oh, the story of G.I. Joe.
Ooh, okay. Oh.
Did he play Shipwreck?
No.
Cobra Commander. He had love and hate tattooed on his knuckles.
I mean, Mitchum was
wearing him.
That's Night of the Hunter.
Yes.
But he had done a lot of roles, but, you know, Wellman gave him this part that made him shine from then on.
It seemed like a heavy in, like, film noir or something.
Yeah, But that was really the role that put him in the public eye.
Cool.
He also liked to smoke marijuana, right?
Yes, he got arrested once.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing that in.
Good on you.
So, segue. Oh boy,
I don't like drugs. I don't. Leap year, like Amanda, I'm going to point out that leap year means that February has an additional day in it, which I'm not excited about.
That is the theme of the episode.
Yeah,
sure.
I know that.
Let's see how close you come.
Leap year has an additional day in it, but I'm not excited to spend it. It means that I have to wait an additional 24 hours before the start of my favorite season, spring. Now, while I'm waiting, there is another season that I enjoy, and perhaps you will too. But first, I'll enter into a patented Jeremy-style childhood reminiscence, which relates to his subject.
I always love these.
Yeah, break out the chairs, kids.
These are gather around.
Gather near that plate over the mantle.
Gather around, children. Everyone, put on your "Where's he going with this?" hats.
So you told me, and I still don't know where we're going. Yeah. Oh, boy.
So one of the pivotal moments of my young life, I was carrying around a plastic margarine tub filled with cassettes because I had not yet invested in a cassette holder.
It's a round one.
It was a round one, yeah. But it was a
country. What did you get, like two cassettes in it?
Yeah. No, I had several.
How big was this thing?
It was country crock.
Yeah.
It was like country crock.
Big shredded bread.
It wasn't like a, it was a large-ish one.
Had like whipped cream bowl size,
It was pretty big, man. My mom, we shopped at Save a Lot, you know.
So this is probably the 80s, and so this is before your compact discs.
Yes,
and streaming kids.
All of this was taped from CDs from my dad, probably, mm-hmm. and some were purchased at places like Sam Goody. So I was carrying these cassettes around because I wanted to impress this girl that I was in love with. I was like 7 or so. She was a teenager. And so I wanted to show her these tapes. And so she worked at the same place as my dad. But so I had these tapes, and I was like, I'm going to show these to her, and she's going to think that I'm awesome and fall in love with me. So I showed them to her, and it was stuff like Bon Jovi, Huey Lewis and the News,
and probably Dokken and Poison and stuff like that. And she kind of took a look, you know, indulging me, which was very sweet of her. And then she said, "That's devil music." And I was crushed.
Oh, no.
But despite my young age, I knew that she was absolutely wrong. That music is insipid, not insidious. But it was years before I realized that the best music sort of always flirts with magic and darkness. So the season that I can enjoy before spring is Season of the Witch, How the Occult Saved Rock and Roll by Peter Babergall.
Jeremy's the best. This should be on every episode.
Thanks. This book sort of tells the story of how Satan, the elder gods, and other mysterious forces cast a spell over rock and roll and made it better. So this subject has been sort of investigated by concerned parents since the dawn of rock and roll, but Peter Babergall is uniquely suited to the task. He's written about drugs and faith in his own life in a memoir, and he's profiled dark wizards like Samuel R. Delaney, Thomas Ligotti, and Michael Moorcock for The New Yorker. So this book sort of resides at the intersection of all these subjects, a crossroads where mysticism, Eastern religions, psychedelics, and charismatic practitioners of every type of hoodoo imaginable meet. Originally released in 2014, this book sort of goes beyond the cartoonish images of Alice Cooper's stage show and Ozzy Osbourne biting the head off a bat to find the magical sources at the root of both rock and roll's greatest performers and its unsung heroes. So you got David Bowie burning black candles in his house because he thought he was coked out of his mind and he thought the house was haunted, to Brian's guys, coils, sex magic symbols, sigils. He covers a whole lot of ground.
So they're like Led Zeppelin doing that thing.
There's
secluded
Jimmy,
Aleister Crowley's house.
Yeah, like, Jimmy Page getting Do What Thou Wilt inscribed on the runout groove on Led Zeppelin records and all that good stuff. So the occult in this book, and I guess in any context, is defined as anything going against the Christian orthodoxy of the Western world. So you get, like I said before, Eastern religions and all this stuff. So it's not just Satan and evil stuff. But he starts all the way back with sort of rock and roll's sex and drugs connection to the myth of Dionysus, and then moves forward toward the West African trickster god Eshu's transformation into the devil at Robert Johnson's crossroads.
I gotta read this book.
So the 1960s are obviously like a big portion of this book. The Beatles sort of emblematic of that era. The Beatles were into transcendental meditation, and also people thought that there were hidden messages in their record covers, and the whole Paul is Dead hoax sort of was like a symbol of that, not necessarily an occult thing, but sort of people striving to find this deeper meaning in their work. And so he also writes about the satanic panic kind of stuff, which rose alongside rock and roll pretty much since its beginning, but really kind of had its heyday with like heavy metal in the 80s and stuff. And this is sort of a parallel universe of paranoia and biblical absurdity, but that never takes over the book. It's not like a focus, and he doesn't sort of belittle that sort of thing. But if this book had appeared 30 years ago, the sort of volume of the collective gasp of Tipper Gore and other members of the PMRC would have rivaled the volume of any band that was of that era. So this isn't an alternative history of rock and roll. It's the history of rock and roll. Church leaders and concerned parents have been right all wrong along. Rock and roll is of the devil. Thank God.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Mine?
Oh, I thought Mike.
I think it's me. I was shocked. Shocked! That a song that's been playing at heavy rotation on my mic pod won a Grammy on, I guess, the previous Monday. You may be wondering which song could that possibly be. Was it Uptown Funk?
Nope. I bet it was Uptown Funk.
Nope. Listen to the whole thing.
Was it Coldplay?
Nope.
Sorry, you missed that discussion last week.
Oh, yeah. A lot of Coldplay. The cast recording of Hamilton? Nope. A rap musical holds no appeal to me.
Especially one about old white men.
Is
it okay.
A rap? Is it a rap? It's a rap musical?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. 100%.
What is wrong with people?
About Alexander Hamilton. It sounds like it sounds like a joke. It sounds
like
Pride
rap.
And Prejudice and Zombies.
I was like, is this serious? And I'm like, they're really serious.
No, it's supposedly the greatest musical ever made, but I don't
know. I listened to it.
You can't get tickets for less than $400.
I listened to the soundtrack. It's pretty good.
I mean, I listened to the first half. I haven't made it all the way through.
I mean, musically, it is... I mean, it has just as much Broadway as it has rapping.
That's musically,
but it's good.
I mean, I need to see it. Like, that's my problem.
It looks like anything to you. Yeah, you need to see it.
I need to see it. Okay. Anyway, sorry.
I like rap music. This is not me, like, how dare rap music invade Broadway?
It's not like Juicy J or anything. I mean, you know.
I don't like musicals and I don't like rap, so it's kind of like my kryptonite. I mean, I like Alexander Hamilton, but I don't really care to like.
I like Alexander Hamilton.
Of course I do.
Out of all of that, that's what I would pick, too.
I like $10 bills. I mean, you know.
Aaron Burr. Yeah.
Although I haven't seen the musical, nor do I care to, but have you seen the thing on YouTube where, like, the guy who plays Aaron Burr in Hamilton recreates the Aaron Burr commercial from the 90s?
I love that commercial.
The entire thing, yeah.
Really?
They even have, like, the bullet and, like, the picture behind him.
Going, peanut butter?
And it's like, I kind of freaked out.
I didn't know I'm not the only person that remembers
I love that commercial.
That's the only thing I know about Alexander Hamilton is that commercial.
Oh. Well, anyway, I'll cut that joke because it's getting old. Anyway, so the band Ghost won Best Metal Performance for the song Cerise off the album Meliora, which we have on Hoopla. Ha ha! Months ago, I came up with the idea of looking up bands who are coming to town and seeing if they're any good. I got tired of
what
getting...
What a novel concept!
You gotta understand, musically, I'm like way behind everybody else.
Oh, I don't hate it.
I got tired of getting
to
a band.
That's why you don't like the Hamilton musical.
Yeah, you know, maybe 10 years from now, I'll be like, this is amazing. Why didn't I like this?
I found this. This is awesome. You gotta hear this.
Yeah, we know this, man. Pish posh. Have you guys heard of Nirvana? Anyway, I got tired of getting to a band, only to find out that they only tour the coasts. Yeah. Ghost immediately jumped out from the bands who are coming to town. For the lead singer, Papa Emeritus III wears corpse paint, and the rest of the band wears Art Deco devil masks. I was like, I gotta listen to these guys. All their songs are about the devil. They could be in the appendix to Jeremy's book, Season of the Witch. You know, one of the songs begins with, you know, a bunch of demon names that are actually like, you know, Asmodeus, Satanus. Lucifer! It's kind of amazing. Musically, I'd say they're a cross between Blue Cult and Merciful Fate. And if you heard of both those bands, we are besties.
I've heard of both those bands.
And we're friends. See, it all works out. None of the annoying metalcore growly singing that I hate. Everything's very melodic.
You don't like the growly singing?
I hate growly
love
singing.
Metal?
Oh, God.
How are you a metalhead if you don't
yeah,
like
see,
growly singing?
As metal goes, I am like such a kind of like, it's you know, hard, flaky, lame-o fan.
I think hardcore... and metal merged in the 90s, and was this like a Y in the road for you?
Yeah.
Because that's what everyone sort of...
Yeah. It's like...
I need an old priest and a young priest.
Yeah. I was wondering, because I don't care about lyrics, why that just bugs me so much.
I was going to say, yeah.
And then it's like, I realized it's basically like, you know, for me, I just like... the music, man. And it's kind of like having
it's about
like
the tune.
It's like hearing like something that's out of tune like for like an entire album. It's like, you know, why can't you just fix that? It's kind of like tomatoes in a sandwich. Get that crap out of my sandwich. I've been listening to all of Ghost discography on repeat. I'm super excited to see them on May 3rd at the Marathon Music Works. Congratulations to the Grammy, I guess. They were the only band who in the like non-taped portion of the Grammys who showed up to accept their reward.
Wow. Cool.
Jeremy, what devilish thing are you talking about?
I like growling and I like screaming, but I want to hear some words. You know what I mean? Like I like a good scream.
You have to really like whip out a lyric sheet, which is just again my kryptonite.
I like lyrics. I like a good turn of phrase, but I don't like a like.
See, like, I actually kind of like that.
Like I bought
King Diamond and Bristle of Fate.
I bought Slayer's Rain and Blood like years ago, and like it was like starting. I'm like, okay, this is sort of what I was expecting, and then it's like, yeah, and it goes,
yeah.
Like, how did you?
Oh yeah. Iron Maiden, you know,
oh,
Bruce
yeah.
Dickinson.
I kind of like the operatic, but I don't know. I mean, metal and me never have been like close, but I'm a.
I'm currently a casual metal fan because, you know, I've gotten called a poser many times and I don't care.
I'm metal curious. so what's actually taking my fancy is a book called Fantasy Sports by Sam Bosma. It was published by No Brow in 2015. This is a clever little bait and switch manga book. Which at first appears to be about a mage's intern named Wiz, who's fed up with Mug, the burly, surly mage she's been paired with. And after both of their requests for transfers are denied, they travel to a giant pyramid, which is ruled by an immortal with three eyes called He of the Giant Steps. And when they try to steal He of the Giant Steps' treasure, he does the only thing a three-eyed immortal can do. He challenges them to a game of basketball. And so the rest of the book is this Egyptian pharaoh-looking guy fighting or playing basketball against these people.
All
and
right.
It's amazing. The art is sort of looks like an old manga, sort of like Osamu Tezuka, but sort of seen through a non-ironic 1990s basketball filter. So sort of think Astro Boy meets White Men Can't Jump. Or like Astro Boy meets that like every Michael Jordan commercial. Anyway, it's very good. Check it out. It's not in the library. Amanda?
Okay, so
interlibrary loan, gangs.
That's what we're here for. All your Egyptian basketball needs. So for my take of this week, I was going to talk about the Olympics because I saw a commercial for it the other day and got excited. But then I realized that I have to wait clear until August for the fun to start.
Oh, is this just summer?
Olympics? Yeah, summer Olympics, wow. but not till August.
Is
so
it
like.
In-
Rio.
Rio? That's okay.
Yeah.
Rio.
What?
Bill just did a fan dance and you missed it. That was awesome.
Yeah. Get the video.
Audio podcast. Yeah.
So
that's why I did a fan
dance. It's the audio podcast. Welcome. So instead of talking about the Olympics, because I don't want
to
wait that long.
He's Duran Duran.
Are you done?
Her name was Rio and she something Stan.
Keep going, Amanda.
Keep going.
You got to talk. If you don't talk, he will talk.
He will sing.
Words.
Excuse me. So instead, I'm going to talk about the movie Deadpool. My husband recently asked me to go see this one with him, and I initially said no because I'm not a big fan of superhero movies, and I really had no idea who the heck Deadpool even was. Then he made me watch the trailer, and I was so in. It was hilarious and snarky. Plus, it starred Ryan Reynolds, who I think is both man pretty and funny.
He's man pretty.
He's
kind of a beautiful guy.
He's a whole new commercial where like these the bank commercial. Have you seen him? Where he's like these women are driving around everywhere and like they see him everywhere. Oh. And I don't remember the point of the commercial, but it's like everything is him.
Yeah.
So
he's kind of beautiful.
It's a very bonny young man.
Yes, which he makes fun of in the movie too, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I should also mention that the female lead was Marina Bakarin. I don't know how you say her name. Who was Inara in Firefly? So everything comes back to Joss Whedon at the end. But I now have to go out on a limb and say that Deadpool is the best superhero movie I've ever seen, ever. It started out with snarky credits and made fun of itself from the beginning. It was kind of like, I would say that Deadpool was kind of like Superman meets Freakazoid, which if you don't know what Freakazoid,
Freakazoid.
Is.
Yes, it's Freakazoid.
It was a short-lived Saturday morning
Spielberg
cartoon that no one watched except me.
I watched some of them.
I loved that show.
I know.
It was amazing.
I have it on DVD and I will never ever sell them to McKay's ever, never.
Earthworm Jim.
I never said like from Jim, but I did like Freakazoid. So I loved it. I love Deadpool. I don't know any of the Deadpool backstory. Like I'm not, but maybe Jeremy will loan me his comics so I can catch up.
Think Wolverine, but more snarky at meta.
Yeah. I don't like Wolverine, and I like
he's
Deadpool.
He's the merc with a mouth.
Yeah.
So Deadpool, go see it. It's funny.
If I put the trailer in, you'll get it.
Yes, absolutely, right away. It's not like it's not subtle.
I love you, Wade Wilson. We can fight this.
You're right. The cancer's only my liver, lungs, prostate, and brain. all things I can live without.
What if I told you we can make you better? You're a fighter. We can give you abilities most men only dream of. Make you a superhero.
You just promise you'll do right by me, so I can do right by someone else.
And please don't make the super suit green or animated.
One thing that never survives this place is a sense of humor.
We'll see about that, Posh Spice.
Oh, come on. You gonna leave me all alone here with less angry Rosie O'Donnell?
I wanna shoot, baby.
Packed in your stack, especially in the back. Brother, I wanna thank your mother for a butt like that. Yo, shotgun bang. What's up with that thing? I wanna know, how does it hang? Hold up, Mr. Buff, like Prince Day. You're a sexy mother.
Wait! You may be wondering why the red suit. Well, that's so bad guys can't see me bleed. This guy's got the right idea. He wore the brown pants. Cue the music.
X go, give it to you. Ah! Wait for you to get it.
What the?
X go, deliver to you.
Ah!
Red with the enemy. No matter how many caps I break, red with a flex enemy.
Reeks like old lady pants in here.
Why such a douche this morning?
Oh, God, you are hard to look at. You look like the topographical map of Utah.
Exactly.
I am very turned on right now.
He's gonna give it to you. He's gonna give it to you.
You are haunting.
You look like an avocado had sex with an older avocado. Thank you.
There was a guy watching it on one of the computers yesterday.
The movie or the trailer?
The movie. Pirated copy.
Yeah, wow. It was like subtle. It had that like glow. It looked like a soap opera, you know? I was like, oh.
It was a very good Valentine's Day movie.
Yeah. I too give it a thumbs up. Me and Amanda agree.
Amanda, was going to say, you know, I was going to laud you for being open-minded to go seeing a superhero movie, but I think you just, like, added fuel to their fire
that didn't need it to be.
Like, you had to fight just to talk, and you're like, oh, yeah, I wanted to talk about Deadpool. You guys happy?
I'm not talking about Deadpool. I don't like Deadpool as a character. I am flabbergasted at his popularity.
That is the only superhero comic I read now.
See, I don't understand.
I don't like humor in my comics.
It's because you like death metal.
Yeah.
Cool story, guys.
Satan
New Mutants 98 is great and all.
I got to make up for last week when I didn't get to say anything.
That's a cool story, guys. Hey, Bill, what's the name of your fancy?
Deadpool.
Matter of fact, I was going to go see Deadpool, but of course I got sick. And so it was a rainy day, and I thought, I'm just not going to risk it because I feel like crap. And so I go to Amazon Prime, see what's there. And I found this movie that I wanted to see. It came to the Belcourt for a short period of time. I totally missed it, called Margin Call, about the last 24 hours of an investment bank, which I always like films that take place in a 24-hour period.
Mr. Dale, these are extraordinary times, as you very well must know.
I don't understand.
The majority of this floor is being let go today.
Eric, I'm very sorry.
I was working on something, but they wouldn't let me finish it. So, take a look at it. Be careful.
Yeah, hello? I need you guys to come back up here.
Wait a second.
Just trust me, okay? I need you guys back here now.
Wait a minute, what am I looking at?
This figure here.
Whoa, is that...
It gets ugly in a hurry.
Is that figure right?
Looks pretty right to me.
There are $8 trillion of paper around the world relying on that equation.
But we were wrong.
No, you mean you were wrong.
Sir, if those assets decrease by just 25%, that loss would be greater than the current market capitalization of this entire company.
How long would it take to clear that from our books?
You cannot be doing what you're thinking of doing.
Sell it all. today.
You're selling something that you know has no value.
So that we may survive. There are three ways to make a living in this business. Be first, be smarter, or cheat.
Look at these people wandering around with absolutely no idea what's about to happen.
You're a very important piece of this puzzle. Are you in on this?
I can tell you that people are going to say some very nasty things about what we do here today.
If we're going down, then you damn well know it'll be together.
I'm not sure that I do know that.
The ground is shifting below our feet.
Remember this day, boys. Remember this day.
And it's sort of like, it's really kind of an interesting film. It's got Kevin Spacey, Jeremy Irons, Zachary Quinto, Demi Moore, Stanley Tucci. And it's almost like, hey, gang, let's get together and make this film. Because it takes, you could tell there was expense, but you could tell that they were shot mainly indoors. And, you know, there wasn't any special effects. Just to say that if you don't have Amazon Prime, lucky enough, the library has it. And so I highly recommend this offbeat. It's hard to describe, drama, thriller, but this definitely offbeat film. Brian.
All right. So I was going to talk about the Grammys, but I think we kind of maybe got our shots in or not. I just, since we're the library podcast, I'll point this out because this really tickles my fancy. Sherilyn Kenyon has sued Cassandra Clare for copyright infringement.
Nice.
What? Saying that Cassandra Clare basically stole her ideas from Sherilyn Kenyon's Shadowhunters series.
Shadowhunters, Darkhunters.
Her dark. That's it. Well, Kenyon is saying that Claire stole her Dark Hunters premise for her Shadow Hunters series.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So, Claire.
They sound nothing alike.
Claire has said that she's surprised and disappointed, but her lawyers have said, go eat a pickle. So,
I like pickles.
That'll be interesting.
That's a fancy.
Well, because didn't they have a new TV show that debuted off the Claire series?
Yes,
which is probably where the trouble started.
What did Cassandra Clare wrote the?
I thought she did like his dark or the Mortal Instruments. Right?
Yeah, Mortal Instruments.
Okay, I haven't read those, but I know that name.
Seen them. Yeah,
I was originally.
Yeah, I've never read. I've read Carolyn Kenyon. I haven't read Claire. Huh. So.
You know, Sherilyn Kenyon lives in Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You know, I've met her a time
she
or two.
She came to the library a few years ago.
I've met her a time or two. She's, like, an opinionated, fierce person. But I wish her luck in this kind of lawsuit. So copyright for fiction.
That's on the, paranormal fiction. I don't know that.
That's a new genre, F/F. It's really, unless someone just straight up plagiarizes you, it's really hard to win a lawsuit as far as someone stealing, like, fictional concepts.
What's, like, parallel thinking as a, right?
Well, it's all in that genre. It's all that paranormal that it's all 97% the same. Right. Like, the difference is, like, your character name and if you're sparkly or not.
Yeah. So. What?
Couldn't have said it better myself. These are the corrections. I mentioned Frank Chin. We don't have any Frank Chin books anymore.
Aw, sad face.
I think we have like one of his stories in one anthology. That's the library challenge of the day.
Ooh.
Ang Lee is from Taiwan. I didn't mention that. I didn't make a distinction between Taiwan and China.
Uh-oh.
But if anyone would like to now.
Yeah, they're separate. It depends on
it depends
which
on,
side you...
depends on who you ask.
Yeah.
And so I didn't go there.
It's either a rogue province or a separate nation, depending on...
who you ask.
Yes.
Which government you ask.
Have you guys seen Mission Impossible, Rogue Province? It's really good.
So if you have an opinion about Taiwan.
I missed that one after Spectre Protocol.
And China. Leave it in the comments. Someone might mention it. I don't know. You know, the episode just posted this morning. The morning that we're recording is the episode, the Chinese New Year's episode posted. Yep. Then, of course, we chose to do a Chinese New Year's episode as opposed to a Grammys episode. I don't know what that means.
I know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Grammys.
For more information about Gwen Stefani.
Oh, wait. I had
wait. Other people had corrections?
Oh, what?
I don't have a correction. I just wanted to make a comment. You, Brian, referred to Bill, Mike, and myself as bears in the podcast cave while you were talking about Brokeback Mountain, and I thought that was very funny.
I apparently missed that comment. I did hear the bit about the comic book boys.
He said, I thought I would have to fight all the bears in the podcast cave to talk about something. And maybe
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
And I thought that was very funny.
So I thought I'd like to chime in, even though I was not in the episode, that I like to hear my name about 9,000 times. Thank you for recommending Magic Mike. I felt loved. I thought I was going to bet you that Ang Lee's Hulk sucks.
Oh.
Everyone who knows me knows I'm a creature of Abood, and when I'm in the mood to see a giant green guy smash stuff, I'm not really in the mood to see a tense family drama about child abuse and the fracturing of a marriage. It's a movie that has both scenes of people crying while looking in the distance and atomic poodles. Nope.
This is a winning combination to me.
Nope. I was going to recommend the excellent American Born Chinese by Gene Llewellyn Yang. I don't want to get into too many details since I'm saving it for our inevitable library materials that take place in middle schools episode in 2018. But
I'm still working on that one.
Got to think up topics, gang. Only two more years. But it parallels the story of a Chinese-American boy struggling to fit in school and Sun Wukong, the Monkey King. It would have combined both Chinese culture and monkeys.
Wow. I am
not crazy for suggesting this topic.
The perfect choice.
And lastly, Chinese civilization lasted 5,000 years into brooding world culture, yet Jeremy picked Howard the Duck.
Chinese civilization? Wow. I'm sorry, I disrespected Chinese civilization.
Final. Do you have more?
I was gonna say, I do have a crush on Leah Thompson and her giant 80s hair in that movie, so. Shine on, you crazy diamond.
It's a great movie. I stand by it.
Magic Mike XXL is the one that's about the economic downturn after seeing it, not the first one. Okay. For more information about the Grammy Awards, which you can get all the Grammy nominees on Hoopla and CD, go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And the theme music is by
Andy.
Next week,
Alan Rickman.
Always.
Alan Rickman.
Okay, what order are we going to go in here?
What is the cortex of...
Amanda, you want to go first?
Sure.
I think you have the most. That's the most appropriate.
Because it's called leap year.
Super teen extraordinaire. Freakazoids, freakazoids. Run around in underwear. Freakazoids, freakazoids. Dressing Washington, D.C. Freakazoids, freakazoids. And I set the fabric down to...